And then open your Bibles, please, to Genesis chapter 12. We're going to read verses 1 through 3 and then skip down and read verse 7. And you'll see after we get into the lesson why we're skipping on down to verse 7. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Then down in verse 7, "Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.' And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him." There are some events which are so important that they actually changed the course of history. In the 1st of July of 1863, the course of the battle in the Civil War was favoring the Army of Northern Virginia in the East, as Robert E. Lee, of course, was the commander of that army, and the North had not been able to find a general who could find a way to defeat him. And so after a series of victories in Northern Virginia, they decided to take the battle to the north, try to get them to end the war, maybe to bring England into the war on the side of the South. And so Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia marched up into Pennsylvania, and the North was just in a panic. And actually the two armies blundered together at a little place in southeastern Pennsylvania called Gettysburg. And of course you know about that battle that took place from July the 1st to the 3rd, 1863. And actually one epic charge. You remember Pickett's charge, of course, as 12,500 of the Confederate soldiers charged straight on in up the hill into the teeth of the Northern Army that was entrenched at the top of the hill, and of course were unable to break through. And that was the high point of the war for the South. From then on, it was just a matter of how long they would be able to hold out until they had to surrender at Appomattox Courthouse. But that which was the turning point, that which determined actually the outcome of the Civil War, and see, it determined whether we'd be two nations, one slave and one free, or whether it would be one great nation that would have power to eventually become the great power of the world in the latter part of the 20th century. But that one battle that really turned the tide and really determined the outcome of the Civil War was the battle at Gettysburg, July the 1st, 1863. And actually, we might say Pickett's one charge is that which should, and the failure of that charge to dislodge the Union troops at the top of the hill was that which determined the outcome of the Civil War, determined whether or not there would be two nations, one slave and one free, or again one great nation that would be the greatest, become the greatest world power in the world at the end of the 20th century. And so sometimes just one event determines a great sweep of history. And it's not always a war that does that. Oftentimes it is. But the one event that really determined the sweep of history so far as the salvation of mankind is the threefold promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3 and verse 7. There actually are seven specific parts to that. And you remember, of course, biblically, that both the number 7 and the number 3 are significant numbers. There are seven specific promises that God made, but there are three great promises, and these three great promises, first of all, give the outline for the remainder of the Old Testament. The remainder of Old Testament history is simply a fulfilling and a fleshing out of the fulfillment of the promises that God made to Abraham. And in fact, everything that goes before Genesis 12 in the book of Genesis, although it covers a couple of thousand years of the history of mankind, actually introductory too. And Genesis 12, 1 through 3 is the theme of the book of Genesis. And then it's the outline of the Old Testament, and it ties the Old Testament to the New Testament. And we'll see that as we go through our study of the promises that God made to Abraham. And it is the outline of the development of God's plan of salvation. So a simple little thing of God appearing to a man in the Ur of the Chaldees, down close to modern Kuwait, And making that one man some promises, that is how much impact that it's had on the world since. So we're going to take the time, not just today, but in later lessons, to study the promises that God made to Abraham. God appeared to Abraham around the time of his 75th birthday. We find that actually from what is said by Stephen in Acts chapter 7. And actually, it was a little bit before his 75th birthday. He left the Ur of the Chaldees when he was 75. But God appeared to him in the Ur of the Chaldees, down close to the tip of the Persian Gulf. And it says, "Now the Lord said to Abraham, or to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you." Now here's the first promise. "I will make you a great nation." Now that's quite a promise, to make of one man a great nation. And remember at the time that God made that promise that Abram, though he was a married man, had been married for a number of years. His wife was barren, they had no children. But God said, and Abram's 75 years of age. But God said to him, "I will make you a great nation." Then he says, "I will bless you, make your name great, you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and curse him who curses you." And here's the second great promise. Now see, there are specific promises made through there, but the great sweeping promises, I believe, are easy to identify. Then he says the last part of that, "And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now that promise was became more specific toward the end of Abram's life. But here are two great promises that God has made to Abram: that he would make him a great nation. And the second thing is that in Abram, all the families of the earth would be blessed. Well, Abram arose as God commanded him, and he left the Ur of the Chaldees and traveled up the Tigris-Euphrates Valley to Haran to the north, in the very northern part of the valley of the Tigris-Euphrates River. And there his father Terah died, and Abram turned to the southwest and journeyed across Syria till he came to the land of Palestine, the land of Canaan, as it would have been called at that time. And he crossed over perhaps the northern part of the Jordan River and came to the center part of the land, to a place called Shechem, which was between Mounts Ebal and Gerizim. And there we read in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7, the Lord appeared to him again. And now he gives him a third promise in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7. "Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.' And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him." Now there's the three promises that God gave to Abraham. The first promise, of course, that "I will make you a great nation." The second promise, "In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." And the third promise, that "I will give this land to your descendants." Those are the three great promises that God made to Abram. And I want us to begin to see the fulfillment and the fleshing out of these promises. And particularly, of course, finally, that of the second of the three promises, but in time of fulfillment, the third of the three promises, "In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." There are those who say that the promises to Abraham were unconditional promises. But I believe that if you just look at the passages that are involved in the promise, you'll see that that's not the case. That even at the time when God gave these promises to Abraham, they were indeed conditional promises. Well, let's look then at Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, and notice what God commanded Abram in connection with the promise. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, "Now the Lord had said to Abram, 'Get out of your country, and from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you.'" Before God gave him a single promise, he gave him some command: leave your country, leave your family, that is your extended family, leave your father's house. Now, it didn't mean he was to leave his father, he took his father with him. And he actually took his nephew, of course, besides his wife, with him. But he was to leave the land of his inheritance, leave his extended family, and simply to go to a place that God would show him. God didn't even tell him where he was going. He said, "Get up and go." And he simply began to go at God's command. So there, before God even gave the promise, God gave him commands that he was to obey. But now come towards the end of Abram's life in Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 18. And for sake of time, I'm just going to tell this story. But it's found in Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 18. We don't know exactly how old Abram is at this time. His name has been changed to Abraham. That occurred in Genesis chapter 17. And his son, the promised son Isaac, has been born. That was when he was 100 years of age, and his wife Sarah was 90 years of age. But sometime later now, Isaac is called a lad. And that term lad would have to do with this, a son who is either a teenager or maybe even a young adult. So it's possible that Abraham was as much as 120 years of age. At the time that we read about him in Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 18, but he was dwelling in Beersheba, down at the very southern tip of the land that was the land of promise. And there the Lord told him to go up to the land of Moriah, to the place that he would show him. And he was to offer his son Isaac as a burnt sacrifice. Now Isaac, of course, was the son of promise. Isaac was the dearest thing in this world that Abraham had. Nothing else in this world was as dear as Isaac. He was the one that God had promised to him so long ago. And all of Abraham's hopes, everything that Abraham loved was tied up in Isaac, the one son of promise. And yet God told him, you go to the land that I will show you, and you offer him there as a burnt sacrifice. Abraham didn't question God. He didn't delay. He arose and he prepared. He got the wood together. He took the knife. He arose and with the donkey and the lad and a couple of servants to go with him. And he traveled to the north and came to the place of Moriah. And he told the servants to remain there at the foot of the hill, and he and the lad would go to the top. And as he journeyed toward the top of the hill, and you can read this for yourself in Genesis 22, verses 1 through 18. Isaac said to his father, well, Father, here's the wood and here's the fire. Where's the sacrifice? And I'm confident that broke old Abraham's heart to hear his son ask that. But he simply said, the Lord Himself will provide. Yahweh Yireh, the Lord Himself will provide. And so Abram went on to the top of the hill, and he laid the stones in order. And he took Isaac, and laid the wood in order, took Isaac and bound him and laid him down on the altar. And he drew back the knife to plunge into the heart of that darling son of his. And of course, that's when the angel called to Abraham and said, Abraham, do not lay a hand on the lad, for now I know that you fear me. And Abraham looked up and saw the ram caught by the horn of the thicket, and took the ram and offered it to God as a sacrifice. And then the angel of the Lord spoke to Abraham and again said, because you feared me, because you obeyed me, therefore, and he repeats the Abrahamic promise, but he says, because you have obeyed me, because you have done this, this is the reason. By the way, there he more specifically says, in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So it's not just in Abraham, but Abraham descended through Isaac, that all the nations of the earth would be blessed. So rather than the Abrahamic promise being a promise that was unconditional, it was conditioned not only on Abraham obeying God and leaving the Ur of the Chaldees and going to a place that God would show him. That was far from easy to do. Abraham was an old man when God called him to leave the Ur of the Chaldees. But it also involved Abraham willingly, without question, being willing to offer his only begotten son, that is, only son of promise, be willing to offer him as a burnt sacrifice. And Abraham never even delayed in doing that which God commanded him to do. So from the beginning, there's no such thing as an unconditional promise so far as the Abrahamic promise. It was conditional all the way through. Now, the reason I'm emphasizing, well, there's several reasons. First of all, because it's true. But secondly, because there are those who say that God sometimes gives us unconditional promises and we don't have to do anything. But I don't know what that is. God conditions His promises to us on our faithful obedience to Him. And then some say, well, the Jews are unconditionally God's people. not even Abraham, was unconditionally one who was to receive the great promise, the father of the Jews. Abraham himself had to obey all that God commanded him to do in order for him to receive the promises that God gave to him. There's no unconditional promises. God is one who is he always is fair. He doesn't favor one over the others. And he gave the promise to Abraham because Abraham was a man of faithful obedience. Well, let's look at the promises. First, we're going to look at the nation promise. And that may be all we'll have time to look at this afternoon, because we want to close in time for us to have the short business meeting. But in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, "Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." So God promised to Abram that He would make of him a great nation. Now, I know, of course, from the story of Abram becoming Abraham, that during his lifetime, finally, as an old man, now he did have a son, Ishmael, but that was Ishmael was not the son of promise. In fact, Ishmael was born because Abraham and Sarah didn't have enough faith to wait for the promise. So Ishmael was not the son of promise. But finally, Isaac came along in his old age, but he only had Isaac. He just had that one son. Now, after Sarah died and Abram remarried, and Keturah was his wife, and there were several sons by Keturah, but none of them were the sons of promise. Only Isaac was the son of promise. In fact, those others became heads of families among the Arabs that had become the inveterate enemies of the descendants of Isaac, the Jewish race. Well, Isaac had two sons, and one of those was the son to whom the promise would be given. That is Jacob, the younger of the two. And then Jacob had 12 sons. And of course, when Jacob was an older man, then because of the famine in the land, because Joseph, by the providence of God, had been sent ahead into the land, became second only to Pharaoh, Jacob's family, and Jacob's name changed to Israel, went down into the land of Egypt. And from the time of the Abrahamic promise, Genesis chapter 12, until the time that the Lord delivered Israel from Egyptian bondage was 430 years. Moses, the inspired writer in Exodus chapter 12, says it's 430 years to the day, from the time of the promise to the time when God delivered Israel from bondage in Egypt. But during that time, something happened to Israel so far as the numbers of the people involved. In fact, when they come out of Egypt, they go, took them about 2 years, but they went down to the very tip of the Sinai Peninsula, Mount Sinai, and there the law was given, and there the tabernacle was built, and they were formed into a nation. And then these people that were the descendants of Abraham through Jacob or Israel, these people took a census at the command of the Lord. And in this census, they only counted the men between the ages of 20 and 60 who were able to go to war, and they left out the tribe of Levi because they were not to be the ones who would go to war. So this does not even include all the able-bodied men in Israel, but men between the ages of 20 and 60, other than the tribe of Levi, who were able to go to war. And when they'd finished all that tallying, they came to 603,550. That's remarkable, isn't it? That this Abram, who had not been able to have a son, now 400 years later, his descendants number, just the fighting men number 603,550. Well, then they were led, of course, by Moses through the wilderness for 40 years. Moses died before he could enter the promised land. But before Moses died, he was telling them, preparing them for the entrance into the promised land. And in fact, the book of Deuteronomy is a series of sermons that Moses preached in the plains of Moab before Moses was taken up on Mount Pisgah and died. And Joshua took over the leadership of the children of Israel, and he told them what they were to say when they came into the land. He said, "Have the first fruits of the land." And when they took the first fruits to the Lord, then they were to say this to the Lord: "You shall answer." This is Deuteronomy 26, verse 5. "You shall answer and say before the Lord your God, my father was a Syrian." Now they talk about Abraham there. My father, excuse me, we're talking about Jacob. My father was a Syrian about to perish. That is, he was about to die from the famine in the land of Canaan. He went down to Egypt and dwelt there. And of course, that's what you remember the latter part of the book of Genesis, how that they went down into the land with all 75 souls down into the land of Egypt and dwelt there, few in number, specifically 75 at that time. And there he became a nation great, mighty, and populous. So it took 430 years. But the first of the great promises that God made to Abraham was fulfilled. Fulfilled in its entirety. While they were in Egypt, in numbers, they became a nation great, mighty, and populous. A nation great enough to have an army of 603,550 fighting men. They were organized into a nation by Moses in the wilderness at Mount Sinai and could have taken the land immediately had they had the faith in God. But because they lacked the faith in God, that generation had to wander into the wilderness for 38 more years until all that generation had died, and they had wandered 1 year for each of the days that the spies were in the land. The spies were in the land 40 days, and they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. All that generation, including Moses, and including his brother Aaron, died except for two men, Joshua and Caleb, because they were the faithful spies who went into the land and came back and said, we can take the land because God is the one who will give us the land. Well, we're going to stop there. We'll see that the first of the three great promises has been fulfilled. They've not yet taken the land. But at this point, had they had the faith in God that they should have had, that generation could have taken the land, but they lacked the faith in God. And so it was left to the next generation to do that. And on the next Sunday afternoon, we will look at that and see how the next generation did take the land. And we're going to look in more detail at the land promise. And then later we will then look at the third part of the promise, the spiritual promise. In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. But here's what we ought to learn from this. That God keeps His promises. In this case, it took Him 400 years to do what He said He would do. Make of Abram a great nation. And I know that, well, we'll have to speculate about this, that Abram oftentimes, or at least at one point in his life, lacked the faith that God was going to do that. Because it had been so long since God had made the promise, and the promise had not been fulfilled. He didn't have any children whatsoever. And so he succumbed to the suggestion that Sarai made in Genesis chapter 16, that he take his handmaid, go into her and have a son by her, and all that led to was problems. God keeps His promises, and we need to have complete faith that whatever God has promised, that He will do. If we'll do our part, we can always count on God doing His part. If we'll be faithful, He will bless us with a home in heaven. There may be somebody who needs to make your life right with Christ this afternoon. If you need to do so, you can let us be known now while we stand and while we sing.